Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you who's at fault for the Raptors' collapse. But we start with Kevin Durant. I blame it all on Joe Lacob, owner of the Warriors, Bob Myers, president of the Warriors, Steve Kerr, coach of the Warriors, Silicon Valley, home of the Warriors fan base, even Kevin Durant, the superstar forward who popped his Achilles in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Golden State's thrilling one-point victory Monday night should be remembered as the night the smartest guys in the NBA got exposed like Enron executives. Did you ever see the documentary, The Smartest Guys in the Room?
Yep.
It was about the rise and fall of Enron, an energy company run by men convinced they were smarter than everyone else. Their arrogance led to corruption, desperation, and a scandal that put many of them in jail. Arrogance and desperation explained Durant's apparent Achilles tear and the likely demise of the Golden State dynasty. Arrogance and desperation explained the crocodile tears dripping down the face of Bob Myers last night.
Kevin had it's an Achilles injury. I don't know the extent of it. I don't believe there's anybody to blame, but I understand this world, and if you have to, you can blame me.
There's no one man to blame. This was a group effort. It takes a village to do something this irresponsible. For my money, Joe Lacob is light years ahead in terms of blame. 3 years ago, in a New York Times Magazine story, Lacob fertilized the arrogance that exploded in Toronto last night. Remember this quote? "We're light years ahead of probably every other team in structure, in planning, in how we're going to go about things." Remember that? Well, now you have to live up to those words. Now you need a fourth title in 5 years to validate your conceit. You need proof. You hear and see all the rumblings that Durant is leaving at the end of the season, and you want to cash in one last time by any means necessary. You ignore all common sense and play Kevin Durant 12 of the first 14 minutes of an NBA Finals game. 12 of the first 14 minutes. You tell the announcers before the game that Durant doesn't have a minutes restriction. Are you kidding me? You handle Boogie Cousins with more care than Kevin Durant.
Dang.
Think about that. Mm. Save me the crocodile tears, the fawning praise of Durant, and the lecture about how misunderstood he is. Lacob, Myers, and Kerr don't understand Kevin Durant, and they've had access to him for 3 years. Or maybe they do understand Durant and exploited his insecurity about toughness and respect. No minutes restriction? 12 of the first 14 minutes for a guy who hasn't played basketball in a month? 12 of the first 14 minutes for a guy coming off a serious calf injury? This is abuse and exploitation. This is negligence. This is why all of that woke bullcrap spewed in the NBA in general and spewed by Steve Kerr in particular strikes me as totally disingenuous. It doesn't remotely surprise me that this tragedy happened to the team located in the woke capital of the United States. That's where all the smartest guys in the room reside. That's where they wag their fingers at Middle America and football and tell us how we don't know how to treat people. Did Kevin Durant's basketball life matter last night? All right, joining the desk now is NBA champion B.J. Armstrong and Bleacher Report's Rick Bucher. Marcellus, I'm going to start with you.
Ooh, man.
Arrogance and desperation, is that what led to Kevin Durant's tragedy last night, or the injury?
No, and I'm never sharing jelly beans with you. I'm just telling you, a lot of black jelly beans in there, man. You be thinking, you can trust Whitlock and eat. Oh, good ones, good ones. Oh, that one. I agree with most of what you said, actually. I think what led to his injury will take us to a term that a lot of people in sports media, in fan bases, don't properly understand, and that's emotional context. Emotional context is different than just the circumstances you're dealing with. It's how you feel in those situations that no one else can tell you about until they're in those situations. So in my world, there are two examples that took me exactly to where I felt Kevin Durant was last night. The first example was Terrell Owens. When he got injured latter season in a Super Bowl run, T.O. had a decision to make. Do I rush back, hyperbaric chambers, try to go out there on one leg in a Super Bowl just to play in that moment because of the emotional context? He did. Great decision for T.O. Great result individually, not collectively. Kevin Durant tried to do the same thing as T.O. We all know that he failed individually. We'll see how his team does. But the one that really hurt, the one that really took me to that raw emotion and to that point of almost a tear, was RG3. Remember when RG3, in the same high leverage emotional context, went out there and to a man, we were like, I don't know, man, you're rookie of the year. Your prime is in front of you. Don't waste it all in this one game. I get it. It's a Super Bowl run opportunity. Don't do it. And he did it. And he died on that field that day. And everyone sat there with the same regret we saw Bob Myers felt, which is, my devil's led me here, and now my angels are going to try and clean this up. And that's what I felt last night. Kevin Durant's devil, the intentions of all those people in that same emotional context led them to a bad place, and now the regret sunk in, and they all wanted to clean it up. Sad reality, but I've seen it before. Unfortunately, it happened again.
Not all injuries in individuals are the same. I think we keep trying to put everybody in the same box and say that because it worked for Terrell Owens, okay, so KD was trying to replicate that.
Yeah.
Except what was Terrell trying to address? Was there any pressure on him to come back and play? It was a desire of him to try to compete.
A selfishness. Yeah. He wasn't a part of the team.
And it was a broken, connected. And when it was a broken bone, could he handle the pain there?
Right.
We're talking about a chronic issue with Kevin Durant,
yeah,
who is sensitive to the questions of, am I a cupcake? He basically blocked out any of the people around him who were saying, KD, this is a bad bet. You shouldn't be taking this risk. The risk is too great.
Yeah.
And he listened.
You blame KD?
I do blame KD.
More so than
no,
Joe
the Warriors. The Warriors had the ultimate veto power. The Warriors had the ultimate ability. I am once again hailing a boat to Whitlock Island. Because I agree with you. I don't think it was arrogance. That was the one exception. Do I think it was desperation?
Why
absolutely
not arrogance? They're the smartest team in all of professional sports. They're light years ahead of everybody.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying they're not arrogant. I'm just, arrogance wasn't what informed this. Greed did. They were going into a new arena. We're supposed to win. We want to win. We need three-peat. And you know what? If KD, this is what hit me the worst about what was said. Joe Lacob, when he said, we respect KD's willingness to go out there. No, you should regret KD's willingness to go out there. That's not something to be applauded. It was a mistake, but it got you where you wanted to go. Yeah, that's the tell for me.
Yeah.
It got you where you wanted to go. You wanted a game six. You wanted to extend this series. And if we had to sacrifice KD's Achilles in order to see that happen, that's what they did.
And to that point, that's why boxers have corner men, to protect you from yourself in those moments. Don't lose your career. Don't lose your life for one more punch. And KD didn't have that.
Well, you know, this, for better or for worse, I've worked in this business now as an agent, and I've had to deal with this exact problem with a client that, Rick, you've covered for many years,
sure,
and Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose had a significant injury, and it required us or the people around him to ask the every question that every athlete has to answer, right? There's the D. Rose character, the player, the warrior, the soldier that wants to come back and play. And then there's the person that you have to speak with. And as an agent, my main concern in dealing with all of my clients is I have to speak to that person. And in this situation here, under no circumstances am I not going to tell Kevin Durant, it's impossible for you to sit out 4 to 6 weeks and then expect to come out there and be able to play at this level at a championship caliber. There's a reason that we go to training camp. There's a reason that you play and you need to get your reps. I get it, in his heart of hearts, his intentions may have been right, but there's a thing in our business that we're all talking about now, is there analytic guys versus the basketball people. The truth of it is, the institutional knowledge that we've gained from being in this business, to me, needed to come to the forefront.
And I love your point. It went with analytics.
Every time I've dealt as an executive, the doctors will say you got a 70% chance. There's an 80% chance. You know, the way we play the game now is all about the numbers.
Yeah.
The institutional knowledge of saying we work in this business and there's no way that we should allow this young man to come out here without getting the game reps. Game reps, not playing 2-on-2, 3-on-3. That can only be observed or known because you have the experience of actually playing. So to me, it was just a matter of you got to bring the entire picture, not just one segment, in order to make an informed decision. And Kevin Durant, in my humble opinion, he wanted to come back. I think his heart was in the right place.
He's a competitor.
He's a competitor. Absolutely. And but I had to deal with that. And that was the most difficult decision I've ever had to do, probably in my life as an agent, is I had to talk to Derek. Not D. Rose, not the guy who averaged 27 points a game and the MVP. I had to talk to the man and say, look, you got to think and see the whole picture based on our experience and wisdom and collectively make a decision.
See, you think Lacob's statement is the tale. To me, the biggest tale is 12 or 14 minutes. And again, you have a coach who played in the NBA. He's a former athlete. Show me anywhere, and look, I'm just speaking off the top of my head, but show me anywhere where someone misses a month, particularly with a leg injury, no minutes restrictions, we're going to throw you out there like you ain't missed nothing. Anybody with a brain would be like, well, hold on, man, that's how you compromise other parts of your body.
Whitlock, you're right, but it was a smart play not to actually articulate a minutes restriction. All that does is strangle yourself.
Because, what about execute one?
Okay, execute one. We don't know how that game was going to play out fully, but it, look, they were on the wrong course in terms of minutes played. By that time, he had played up to 14 minutes in
12
the game. 12 of the 14. There was something even more telling than that. And I was disgusted in the opening moments. Pre-game was a lot for me. For a guy coming back after a month off, Kevin Durant was doing a lot in pre-game. He was doing his normal dances. You shouldn't do your normal pre-game when you haven't been on the court in a month. He was doing his normal workout routine, and then this is what was the telltale, which I had to put on Steve Kerr. Who did the opening tip-off for the game? Who was doing the opening jump
Durant.
Ball? Kevin Durant. Using maximum exertion to go get a tip, that there's no positive consequence. You get to start the game off. You know, in the third quarter, the other team gets the ball. So I was just sitting there like, oh, this is not good. They're treating this like a normal moment instead of a ramp-up moment. But KD, he didn't move in the first initial setups. Those first threes, those were all just catch and shoots.
Yep.
Then he finally said, comfort and maximum exertion, to your point. Once you get off that dry run and them 2-on-2s and 3-on-3s and you have to go sixth gear, it pops.
But Marcel, I don't think they were doing normal. I think the jump ball was like a message. It was like, oh, no, he's all the way back.
Yeah.
He can do it all.
Okay.
Let's put him in Oklahoma drill.
Right.
Let's do it all.
He's ready.
He can do jump ball. And their whole mindset was like, oh, we can sit him out here for 40 minutes and he can get 40 points. And I'm just sorry. Boogie Cousins, when he came back from injury, 3 or 4 minutes at a time. Why didn't they could have taken care of this dude during the game? We're going to play him 4 or 5 minutes, pull him out, 22 minutes tops, and they would have won the game.
Yeah.
But to me, they were so caught up in they, and we keep talking about what the narrative Kevin Durant was caught up in. I believe they got caught up in, man, people are acting like Toronto is better than us. Like we're not a hobbled team, and that's the only reason they're getting away with this. And they were determined to prove a point last night. That everybody, anybody with a brain knows if KD's healthy, this is not, they win 4-1 probably.
Sure.
But they got caught up in that narrative that people were caught up in Toronto.
The desire to prove their superiority.
Yes.
No doubt informed this. But there is, and you made the point, there's also desperation. They realize Andre Iguodala's not right. Klay Thompson's not right.
KD's
Cousins not right.
Sean Livingston.
not the same. Whole this and this is probably our last shot. They can see around the corner. So you know what? Damn everything else, and let's go for it. You mentioned the tip. KD dunked in warmups.
Exactly.
So KD was all in on wanting to buy the narrative too. And what they needed was somebody saying, KD, you don't have anything to prove. We know where your heart is. We're not going to play you because we're not going to take advantage of what you want to do. No one with the Warriors did that. And that, to me, was the negligence in this.
For me, the worst person in all this is Steve Kerr. And I love that Anthony Slater asked him a question and he dodged it after the game.
Anthony Slater with The Athletic. Is there any regrets about bringing Kevin back into the series now that with what happened?
Again, I'm going to leave that to Bob.
This man has an opinion on immigration, everything that goes on at the White House, any police shooting in the area.
Yeah.
But Kevin Durant, the guy, he's in control of his playing time. I'm going to leave it to Bob Myers. Are you kidding me?
I'm going to defend it in this regard, is that obviously the Warriors know this is a bad look for them. I want one person speaking to address that. I don't want Joe Lacob speaking out, right. Bob Myers, whoever it might be. I need one person to take it and to carry it and to accept it. And Bob Myers put it on himself. He also suggested, and this is where I divert from Bob, because saying there's no one to blame, but I know how this world works. I'm sorry from everything, and I'm colored by the fact, and I've shared it with you guys. I, for the last couple of weeks, was told this is a serious injury. KD should not be playing in this series. It would be a mistake for him to play. They had to know as much as that I did. Now, I'm not in the midst of it. And I know when you're in the fire and you're competing and you want to get it done, maybe that colors your opinion. But someone needed to take a step back and say, we're not going to exploit KD and his future. We're going to put that at the expense of us getting where we want to go. And nobody did that. So is there somebody to blame? Yes, because the Warriors, whether it was Joe, whether it was Bob, whoever, the Warriors collectively had the ability to say, this is a bad bet. We're not going to do it, no matter what our end game is.
I will double down on that. Singular message, singular messaging, one messenger. Okay. But I want to defend them in a different way. That locker room scene, everyone's emotional. Some are even in tears. Kevin Durant reported raw emotion, needed time away from everyone in that same locker room. And Steve Kerr, as a coach, has to realize that this is my time to get command of my team because, guys, we survived. I understand we just lost one of our greatest soldiers, our greatest soldier, but we survived. Take you back to my raw world of football. Move it up 10. That's a term that coaches use when your teammate goes down on the field and you're sitting there, outpour of emotion. You're thinking about your own sports mortality. And then he's like, move it up 10. Keep practice going. Steve Kerr, in that moment when everyone's emotional and no one's even talking about the survival of that game in this series, said, I'm not going to be emotional with the other guys. It's time for me to be cognitive and think about we have another opportunity. So he zigged when everyone else was zagging. And I think that may have come from a conversation with Bob Myers. It's all on me. But also redirect this energy towards our next game and our next opportunity.
You know, one thing I want to point out is, you know, we can all point the finger and look at whether it's Steve Kerr, the Warriors. But one thing in dealing with these young people is that we have to give Kevin Durant respect in that he understands his body better than anyone else. And Kevin Durant had to authorize or work with the Warriors to say that I'm ready to play. And I think until we hear from him, because these kids aren't puppets. These kids know themselves. These kids deserve the right, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, to say if he feels he's ready, maybe.
That's not how it goes. You know that?
Absolutely.
The trust issue. We trust them to actually tell us more than what we
I'm going to tell you why there's a little bit of credibility what BJ said.
Oh, yes.
We're in this player empowerment.
There you go. There you go. These players today have more information available to them than any time in the history of sports.
Mm-hmm. And more leverage.
And more leverage and all of these things. Under no circumstance is any organization going to tell Kevin Durant when he can and can't play if the man come in that office and say he's...
But now, this is not a black and white conversation. This is the gray, murky area. So your trust actually works against you. I've been there before, misdiagnosed, told I had two lateral groin strains. In football, in basketball, you hear groin, suck it up. You know what I had? A torn abdominal wall, which meant I shouldn't have gotten injections, I shouldn't have kept playing, and I suffer for it. KD, when he's in the gray area, I could push it, but maybe I shouldn't. I trust your opinion. I trust your opinion. I bring it all as a collective. I think KD got seduced like Kawhi got seduced in San Antonio. He trusted the staff, went out there, got hurt, and said, I don't trust him any further.
And Rick and I were both in the league. Michael Jordan had the same situation when he broke his foot. And he went against the doctor's opinion and played in the playoffs and perhaps had one of the great playoff moments in all of sports. He had like 63-something points versus the Boston Celtics. I'm not saying it is cut dry whether you should or you should not.
Right.
In the end, you have to defer to the athlete. And I'm not saying it's right, wrong, but Kevin Durant had to at least acknowledge that he was willing to accept that responsibility.
Yeah, I agree
and
with
I
that.
Think we owe that to him. We owe that respect to him to say that.
The question is the messaging, though. If somebody, if the medical staff, if the Warriors come to me, I'm Kevin Durant, and they say, you know, if you play, you could tear your Achilles. And I make my decision based on that, understanding what the worst case scenario is, as opposed to the messaging is, we think there's a 70% chance you could get through this without a problem.
Right.
It depends on how you present the issue. And again, yes, I believe in all that empowerment. But they sat Klay Thompson in game 3, and he wanted to play so badly, he still suited up. And based on how he measured himself in game 4, probably a smart decision. But that's not what he wanted to do. Sometimes, look, my family does it all the time. They save me from my worst self.
And again, Klay Thompson, it's not written in stone like it apparently was before this with Kevin Durant, that he was leaving. The Warriors still had a future with Klay Thompson, and they treated him that way. There is no future in their minds before this game with Kevin Durant, and that's how they treat him. Like, oh, this is somebody else's commodity, not ours, after a game or two here. And again, I'm just going to go back, and this is somewhat of a cheap shot at Steve Kerr, but I don't care because I didn't like – you don't have to dodge. All you had to say was, hey, we all regret our decision, but Bob Myers is going to handle it. He could have said that. He could have taken some responsibility instead of ducking and dodging. Mark Jackson wouldn't have had KD on the court, or he certainly would have accepted responsibility for it. Stick around. Later in the show, we'll give you our latest approval ratings for Steve Kerr, and Uncle Jimmy will tell us what he thinks about the Warriors head coach.
Boom!
Mark Jackson.
Also coming up,
right.
The Warriors pulled off a crazy win last night, but did Toronto actually choke away the title? We get into that.
About them jelly beans.
And don't forget to check us out on the Fox Sports channel.
Don't eat all Whitlock jelly beans, man. They all ain't.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher are back. Time now for a big story, sponsored by the all-new 2020 Kia Telluride. Give it everything. All right, let's move to the Raptors, who looked like they were on their way to victory last night before a couple of decisions left people scratching their heads. First, head coach Nick Nurse called back-to-back timeouts just as Kawhi Leonard was taking over. Then, with time winding down, Kawhi passed up an opportunity to get off a game-winning shot. Both decisions had some saying Toronto choked away the title last night. I disagree. I don't have a problem with either one of the decisions, the timeouts or Kawhi making the right play there. Passing out a double team.
Oh, that timeout did something. Look, it was a bad choice in the moment because I felt it watching it. Because you got to always remember there are two scoreboards in every single game. It's the one you see with numbers, with your eyes, and the one you feel in terms of momentum. And Uncle Mo is a real relative to a team. And they had Uncle Mo. They had the crowd was raucous. Kawhi just scored 10 in a row by himself. What do you need to stop that for? The goal is for them to stop us, not for us to stop ourselves. So that timeout did a lot for me. Choke, too extreme for me.
I want to answer your question.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you why. They believe they're a much better team than Golden State when Kevin Durant isn't on the floor. Kevin Durant's off the floor. They just wanted to be as strong as possible those last 3 minutes because they believe they're better than them, and they probably are.
Foot on your throat. Do I lift it up? Or do you have to push it off?
What if you're beating up somebody and you feel like it's a little kid and it don't matter whether I take my foot off or not, I just put it back on? That's it's arrogance.
I hear
it. Or there's, I just need one more shot. So let me gather myself and I'm going to hit you one more time and then I know you're going down. That was my sense. And I'm loath to second guess a coach and his feel for his players. They're riding Kawhi Leonard so hard. If his thought process was, I need one more bucket, my guy's gassed, and that's the guy I'm going to. Let me get him a blow. Let's set something up. Let's get something good, because all I need is one more bucket, and I'm good. If that was the thinking, I'm okay with that thought process. I don't believe that they choked.
Yeah.
I believe that it was a matter of the Warriors have just a ton more experience. When we need a bucket, this is where we're going. The Toronto Raptors are still figuring out, it's essentially, let's see what Kawhi can get. And when he can't, now things break down.
Uh-oh.
And that's the difference.
Well, the one thing about the Raptors that I found interesting in that point, to go to the example that you pointed out there, was in a championship caliber series like we're talking about here, you know, we put all the emphasis on the offense. But in my opinion, Nick Nurse called a timeout because this is a defensive-oriented team.
Mm.
He was calling a timeout because, you know, a person who plays defense knows that what's the one essential element you need? You need effort and you need energy.
Yes, you do.
You can't, and it took a lot of energy for Kawhi Leonard to do what he did. I mean, basically, it was 1 versus 5.
Yep.
Kawhi Leonard
was
taking on the Golden State Warriors last night in that stretch, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was, like, incredible. But what he needed to do was settle that team down because they needed one more stop. One more stop, they win that game.
I'm going to give you the other element you left out that's critical to a timeout. On defense, you need communication. And he wanted a bit more
there you go.
Make sure everybody's on the same
Absolutely.
Page.
Absolutely. And that's what he was – because their whole emphasis throughout the playoffs has been their defense. This is a defensive-oriented team, and they feel that they are a better defensive team than the Warriors.
Yes.
They feel that.
And you know what? And I agree with them.
And that's what keeps them in the game.
Respect for that, but he didn't call it for just feel. He called it because of the rules, and you were going to lose the timeouts. So that we were talking the earlier block about analytics and how sometimes numbers can get in the way of what you're really feeling as a purist. Your team wasn't that gassed. Steph had just missed his second three over that span, and then you had just had your best player score 10 straight, and he wasn't even checking for the timeout. Let me see some evidence of fatigue before I say you're gassed. In that moment, there was nothing that showed it. To the point, after the timeout, what was the score? 9 Golden State, 2 Toronto. Coach, in the moment, it wasn't the smartest thing. You let the rules take. Oh, they're going to take them away, so let me just use them.
Use it or lose them.
What? There's no reason to do it in that moment. They lost the momentum.
I'm going to tell you, though, who I thought almost choked the game away was Boogie Cousins. And so I saw more dumb things that from Golden State that I was like, damn, a champion is doing this. And I said, this, you can't bring too many idiots to a team because now you get out of character. And that's what I thought I saw from Boogie. And that's the team I thought choked. I just felt like Toronto didn't make shots. And Golden State, after missing a bunch of shots, Steph's not going to miss them all.
Rick, he didn't call one timeout. He called 2.
Huh?
When? Why?
Again, the signs of fatigue, maybe Nick saw some things that we didn't see. He saw some slippage, or he had a concern that he wanted to address in that case. Because they were in position. Like, we just need to execute this down the stretch. How can I do that? Right. Am I going to put that in the hand of my players, or am I going to try to formulate something to make sure that we bring it home? Ultimately, they didn't. I didn't love the last play because it looked like Kawhi didn't draw a hard double team that was going to create something else. It wasn't formulated. Kawhi's going to go get this. We're anticipating if they double hard, now we're looking for this. But they still took the shot.
Yeah.
It wasn't a choke job by any means. So I feel as if ultimately.
But when I got you on the ropes, I've not seen that fight. When I got you on the ropes, you about to go down. I'm like, let me get you a little pause. You okay? Here we go. I got
punch in me. But how many times are you going to rear back and you're going to take that last, just the hesitation on your part
shot.
That you're going to take that last shot.
All right,
shot.
Coming up.
Come on.
Kevin Durant's injury rocked the Warriors, but is it about to rock the entire NBA as well? We'll tell you why the association may never be the same. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, B.J. Armstrong and Rick Bucher are back. Let's move to the Raptors, who came up just short of the win last night, despite a late-game takeover by Kawhi Leonard that briefly gave Toronto the lead. Kawhi's been a dominant force in these playoffs, and before last night's game, he credited load management for his success, skipping 22 games in the regular season. After watching Kevin Durant's injury, it's hard to believe that load management won't be an even bigger topic going forward. Last night, to me, it was the first thing I thought about. Kawhi Leonard's going up, and Kevin Durant just took a big spill, and Kawhi Leonard skipped 22 games, and the NBA has been changed forever. The 82-game schedule has an expiration point because these superstar players are not going to play 82, and the NBA is going to have to adjust its schedule.
Yeah, and I saw this coming. I think we all did. Now we're starting to connect the dots. Let's go back to LeBron James, who spends reportedly $1.5 million annually on his body. Let's just say he knows what his body's about. What did he start doing to the metrics? Becoming one of the slowest players in the NBA, despite being one of the greatest talents we've ever seen play basketball. That was a conscious effort. What did we see with teams start to understand? And even LeBron James made mention of this. What's the use of winning 73 games and you can't even win a championship? You didn't have enough at the end of the season. What does James Harden show us every postseason? There's a certain fatigue for going out there trying to win the regular season MVP instead of putting yourself in position for the finals MVP. Kawhi Leonard, by the numbers, has never played more than 74 games in his 8 seasons. KD has done that 7 times. As you said, one trajectory going one way, one going the other. Derek Coleman is cited in the article by Frank Isola about how he may have started load management, but I wasn't in the NBA.
Bruce, I played with Derek Coleman.
You played with Derek Coleman, so you know what he said. Hey, coach, I can give it to you when you need it most. You want it in practice or in the game? I give you the story.
That was weed management, but go ahead.
Yeah. It's a little more than load. A little more than the load. Bruce Smith, on the sidelines, Marv Levy, great coach sitting there. And Bruce was sitting there just being a veteran, being a Hall of Famer, getting mental reps more than physical reps. Marv wanted him to step it up, set an example. Bruce said, hey, Marv, I could give it to you when you want it most. Is that Wednesday or Sunday? Is that Thursday or Sunday? Is that Friday or Sunday? Because I'm only going to give it to you once. We realized what the point was. And that was 20 years ago. These players are understanding to run the marathon, you got to pace yourself. And it's going to be a smart play and a change going forward.
The issue I have is that there's a negativity around load management. Like these guys are trying to get away with something or that they're trying to cut corners. And that's where I take exception to the comparison to Derek Coleman. Still get paid, but what's
fans
the smart
still pay
play?
Full price for the tickets. That's where the complaints are coming from.
I understand the complaint, but I look at Kawhi Leonard and I look at Derrick Rose and the decisions they made in not to play. Kawhi Leonard may be on the precipice of winning finals MVP and winning a championship. Where's Kevin Durant? Because he gave in to the other. He gave in to the noise. So I don't buy that. The problem that I have is the game has changed.
Yes.
The game is played at a much faster pace with greater athletes.
Right.
There are more possessions. There is more being asked of these guys on a nightly basis from a physical standpoint that, whether you want to call it load management or whatever, to equate it with Derek deciding, you know what, I'm not up for shoot around. I'm not up for practice. I'll be ready for the games. Trust me on that, is different than this. This is a matter of survival. We're seeing it. We're seeing these guys spend more money and do more conditioning than ever before and still breaking down physically.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me that the game is asking more of them and we need to be smarter in what we ask them to do.
And Rick is absolutely right. The game has changed. Now we hear this term pace and space. Okay, when I played, you know, some 20 years ago, there was an off season. The NBA is a year-round workload now. Right, we're going straight from the playoffs. We're going to go right to summer league. Everyone's talking about grind, and they got to work out in the summer.
Yeah,
taking time off is part of your recovery. Right, resting is part of the recovery process. And when you have these people playing all the time, and there's no time off, this is what's going to happen. So, you know, when we play, our summers were our summers. We took that time off because we knew we were going to play deep in the playoffs. But now everyone is playing and the game is so much faster than it was 20, 25 years ago that you're seeing it. And I'll say this, the way these kids play, crossing over, step backs, those things take its toll. The body wasn't made to do that. Okay, Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook, when I played, I was 165 pounds soaking wet. These kids are 205, 210 pounds doing the things that the body shouldn't be doing at the point guard position. These guards are playing over the top. Kevin Durant is 7 feet.
Bringing the ball up.
Porzingis and these guys are doing things that we just didn't see seven-footers do, which now is putting stress on the body that we just don't know. Yeah. And these kids are ahead of the science because we don't know what they're doing physically.
That's a hell of a point, because just think about all the seven-footers in your era and before. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wasn't
part of it. And you waited for him to get down the court.
Exactly.
Yeah. Leading the break.
He wasn't in frame.
Very deliberate steps, and then you take the sky hook and trot back down the other way. Right. And so the game is, again, I want to go back to, though, is can the 82-game season survive this? We've already heard Adam Silver hint that some adjustments may be coming. I think it's inevitable.
Well, to your point, in the rigorous game we have as a team sport, football, there was an offseason when I was drafted. It was a mandatory minicamp. That's it. They've added voluntary minicamps. They added OTAs and all these coaching sessions. That has taken its toll to the point where they now made a rule change. No consecutive full padded practices. Oh. Now you see Kawhi Leonard, who says, this year I had no consecutive game back-to-backs. So what you have to do is, if they're not going to change it by the aggregate number of 82, then you're going to edit it. So, yeah, going forward, load management has to be the way.
What's really interesting is that they're going to introduce this mid-season tournament idea, and I don't know how you do that around the All-Star game without reducing the stress elsewhere. You can't – I mean, that's where it's the great injustice in football. You want to add two more games – and we'll pay you a little bit more money.
We're going to take the
quality of the game even further down. That's what the NBA, I hope, is smart enough to say, yeah, we want to do more. We want to have more entertainment. We want to have more competition. Okay, but you have to take something away if you're going to add something.
They're going to take games away eventually, in my opinion. And BJ, being an agent, will players accept perhaps a little less money for less games?
Well, I don't think the players will want to accept that, but I think that will be the main goal for the owners, is to say, yeah, well, it'll be like that will be the negotiation with the union, right? As an agent, of course, you don't want that to happen. As a player, the players don't want to give up money, but I think that will be the core of the negotiation of saying, we will take away the games if you take less money, and I think that will be negotiated.
And so if I'm Kawhi Leonard versus Jericho or Repco for Golden State, I have two different perspectives on that. Because Kawhi Leonard's going to make $35 million a year, let's say. Right. Okay, now I'm going to make $31 million. It could be, you know, he may make $2 million and have to be cut down to $1 million. That's real money. So there'll be some... Yeah. But I get the superstars are always going to win.
Yeah. Well,
they are going to win. This is always going to be a star league. But what I think the owners will compromise will be the length of the contracts. You won't see as many 4 to 5 year contracts, and they'll reduce them because you're beginning to see that now with 1 year, 2 year deals, which will somehow they'll figure out, you know, what will be the best moving forward for all the teams.
Well, tell me this, because it hasn't come to a head yet, because the network contracts are already on the books.
Right.
So guess what? Right now, the owners make money two ways, mostly from the television contracts and then in-game experience. They want 41 home games, parking, concessions, ticket prices, memorabilia. Now you start to take that away. So it's one thing to say Kawhi won't be here, but people still going to show up to the Raptors arena. Now, there's just not a game for me to make that extra money. I think that the owner's going to balk at that a little more than we anticipate.
They probably will. There are other revenue streams, though, that they can exploit
attack
globally.
Yeah. All right, coming up, is Justin Bieber headed for an MMA showdown with Tom Cruise?
Oh, my.
TV's hottest looking social media.
What has happened to the sport?
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fun you can have talking sports.
Yang, yang,
Whitlock
yang.
And Wiley.
Let's do it.
Joined now by former Pro Bowler Sean Merriman, Time to get antisocial. Mm-hmm. All right, Darnell. What's cracking?
Got the lights out on.
Hit it one time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go.
You're hype over here. That thing, boy.
Yes, sir. We're going to start off in the octagon. Yep. It looks like Justin Bieber had some smoke with Tom Cruise. Over the weekend, Bieber took to Twitter and challenged Cruise to a fight, saying, I want to challenge Tom Cruise to fight in the octagon. Tom, if you don't take this fight, you're scared and will never live it down. Who's willing to put on this fight? Lights out. Conor McGregor.
You know I've been working.
Right. McGregor decided to chime in saying he would host the battle and then put out a challenge of his own saying, I challenged Mark Wahlberg on the very same card. Back when Mark Wahlberg was Marky Mark, I'd have still slapped the ears off of him and took my UFC shares back. Merriman, I know you've announced your next Lifestyle events coming up July 6th in the Burbank Center, so this could be a main event. But guys, is this real smoke?
No.
I don't think so. No. What people don't understand is Tom Cruise has a wrestling background, for one. Mm-hmm. And he has a wrestling background. But he does about 90% of his own stunts of his movies, so he can still move around. I don't think that just, you know, JB, he sparred with, supposedly sparred with Floyd a couple of times. I don't think that's enough to deal with Tom.
First of all, jumping off an elevator when they say cut ain't the same as getting your butt knocked in the face.
But you got to do it 25 times. I'm just saying he's in shape.
He's in shape for a 60-year-old. He's 56, 57, dog, versus a teen pop star. Ain't no smoke here. There ain't no fire there. Both of, I mean, this is almost like who's going to backpedal to the finish line first. I don't see this as any contest, any contention at all. It ain't nothing to me.
Pillow fight is what I see.
Thank you. real.
Moving on to the Super Bowl champs. The New England Patriots were living it up this weekend after receiving their Super Bowl 53 championship rings. The Patriots referred to their new drip as the greatest ring of all time over Twitter. The design includes 20 sapphires and 422 diamonds totaling 9.85 carats. Ooh. We know this is Brady's sixth ring, so people have been comparing him to MJ. Mm. Julian Edelman asked Brady if he would mimic the infamous picture of Jordan with his six rings. So, guys, has Brady surpassed Jordan as the GOAT?
No.
Why not?
Where are the shoes at? I mean, there's more impact than just six. If you 6-6, then we got to start going into different categories. Is he going to bring dark-skinned, bald-head dudes back in style, Tom Brady? Because Jordan did it for me. So, you know, it's just little criteria that Jordan's impact just seemed greater.
And plus, he's not done, too, right? I mean, he still got some more left. You know, Tom got at least another year or two, and if he gets another ring somehow, and I think it's hurting me a little bit to talk about it because I was one of those rings that he got to kick this out, but he got a couple more years in him, I think, still.
I think in terms of accomplishment, he's right there with George. In terms of persona and brand, celebrity. Nah, he's just not Michael Jordan. Nah. Michael Jordan is a style. It's a swagger to it. Yeah. Not the time. Again, in terms of accomplishment, Tom takes a backseat to no one in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as cool. Even with Giselle, not quite as cool as Michael Jordan.
That's hard to do.
I mean, that's exactly. Hard. Tailored suits, getting out of the Ferrari.
Man,
bringing us Milk Duds back. I mean,
that's why you got him.
Oh, you know he going to be the GOAT forever for
that
me,
bald
man.
Head.
He got me right in high school.
All right, sticking with some football. Carson Wentz just got the bag after signing a 4-year extension worth $128 million. It's over $107 million guaranteed. Wentz called it a win-win, saying, it's something both sides wanted to get done. I knew I wanted this to be home for a long time, and ever since being drafted, it's felt like home. So as soon as we found something that was a win-win, a really fair opportunity, I jumped at it. Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence chimed in on Twitter saying, the richer they get, the better it feels when we humble their ass. Wentz has only played in 24 of the last 37 games the last two seasons, so you think the Eagles will regret this?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
So you bet.
Too injury-prone, man, to give up this kind of money to.
So you're banking on him getting injured again, but that has nothing to do with the contract in this respect. If he's going to be your franchise quarterback, which they all are in on him being that, then if you don't pay him and then you realize, oh, he's staying healthy, oh, what's that price tag then? You're going to actually have to pay more. So this was actually a low-ball deal, paying it forward with the projections.
You know, I love to see players get paid, but in this case, it's not enough consistency on the field in order to warrant this type of contract. You got, I mean, you know how hard I've been on Dak and some of the other guys. I've been hard on Dak, but I would pay Dak before I will Carson because I've been in that same situation before, too, when I've coming off a knee injury.
Yeah.
Team was sitting around waiting to see if I was going to come back healthy again, and I didn't. Good thing they didn't throw me a $50 or $75 million contract because I never came back healthy. I think that this will come back and bite them at some point in time, even if they got him for cheaper right now.
I think it's going to bite him right in the locker room. He's already had some problems with his teammate.
Before he did,
had to say
yeah.
that he was going to address his personality.
Right.
And now they're going to be looking, oh, you got all that money.
Yeah.
And you ain't even, you haven't been here. We like Nick Foles more. Nick Foles took us to a Super Bowl. I just think I would have waited. I would have pumped the brakes before I'd have made this guy, giving him that much guaranteed money. I think it complicates the locker room.
There was a writer that said they were looking at him in Foles-colored glasses.
Hello.
All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away.
It's Darnell. This is my guy. My guy. My question of the day.
All right, guys, so an internet troll called out former world champion boxer Zav Judah on Twitter saying that he's washed up and that he can even beat him in a fight. Most of the time, these trolls get away with this type of stuff, but not this time. Zav Judah actually pulled up to this guy's job and asked him to come outside for 5 minutes, let him talk to him. The troll obviously backed down, claiming he was just playing. So I want to ask you guys, is this a good way to handle trolls on social media?
No.
Hell
no. I watched this video over the weekend and was blown away. I was like, you gonna pull up on somebody.
Pull up on the wrong dude.
Somebody gonna pull out something
and you're
gonna have a big problem. Leave these trolls alone, man. Let people be keyboard warriors. That's how they get their happiness in life.
Exactly. Look, I done seen people get hurt for less.
Yeah.
Die for less. I'm not giving you my time, my energy. I'm not getting out of my way for that. It's just the words communicated from a guy who's in a different place than you. Like, do people understand who is trolling you? And then when you finally go meet them, like, what's supposed to happen in that encounter? No, I'm not giving you no time of day like this.
I think in this case, because it's Zab Judah, he probably should have done it. But I think the troll even went as far as talking about his family and some other stuff. I mean, it was over the top.
Oh, merriment.
No, it was over the top.
What's over the top? Go.
He was talking about his daughter, talking about doing something to his family. I'm not saying it's okay, but what I'm saying is because it was Zab Judah, I think it was over the top. You're one of the best boxers of all time. You know what you can do to this person. You're not going to really hit him once you get there because there's consequences to it. But I don't disagree the fact that once in a while, you might have to roll up on him.
That switch, boy, I tell you still got that tick.
There's a mute button on
Twitter. You know, I'm just saying, boy, it's Zab Judah. So, no, if I was Zab Judah, I wouldn't have done it. But I don't mind if it's a different situation. It happened down the road. I'm just saying.
Would Sean Merriman pull up on somebody? Is there something you can say?
Well, it depends. If I invite him to a gym where it's legal and they signing off on it, then let's go and do it. I'm not going to show up to where you work. No.
Merriman.
But I've done that before.
Merriman. You've done what?
I've invited people to come to the gym. You know where I'm at. Come see me. Now, I've done that before, but the way he did it, I wouldn't have gone that far.
Are you really that disturbed by what they're saying, or you just want smoke?
Yeah, probably a little bit of both.
Probably a little bit of both. Turn the lights on, not out. Like, what are you doing?
When they go to the point where they're starting to threaten your family or say different things, you know, we've seen Deontay Wilder do it, right? The guy who called Deontay Wilder up. He just invited him to the gym. I don't think anything was wrong with that.
Threatening my family?
Well, look, he came to the gym.
If we going to fight, you ain't saying nothing. When you saying something, you ain't about to do nothing.
He came to the gym. That's your mistake. I didn't make you come to the gym. You showed up.
Hell no, I ain't fighting nobody.
You don't like fighting, Marcellus, period.
I don't, but I certainly don't like to fight over words. Like, I can say
Not over Twitter.
Not over Twitter, man.
Show up. Pull up on me.
Coming up.
Hell no.
Kevin Durant might have gotten hurt last night, but did his decision to play actually prove his critics wrong? We get into that. Hurt! All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Whitlock and Wiley, B.J. Armstrong, and Rick Bucher are back. Let's return to the finals, where the Warriors reportedly believe Kevin Durant tore his Achilles last night after deciding to play Game 5 with Golden State's backs against the wall. Leading up to last night, some people had been questioning Durant's commitment to the team, though now it seems pretty clear why it took him a month to come back from a calf injury. After the game, Durant's mother took his critics to task on Twitter, posting, quote, "For all of you who questioned my son as a man, questioned his heart, questioned his integrity, and questioned his love for the game of basketball, you don't know him. He has a heart of a true warrior. This too shall pass. God bless you all. All right, question here is, do you have more respect now for Kevin Durant after last night's performance? And I don't. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Kevin, but last night didn't make me have more respect for him. If anything, it makes me think that Kevin is really, really too into his critics and the noise around social media. His mom's caught up in it. It's a mistake.
Yeah, I'm with you, Whitlock, entirely. No more respect for Kevin Durant because I already fully respected him before this moment. As Klay Thompson was saying post-game, like, people are silly to still come at this guy. They don't know him. They don't know his commitment level. They don't fully respect his talent and his contributions. And I love Mama Durant. Met her many a times. Sweet lady, everyone knows. But I'm mad at her right now for that mindset, because that mindset is getting lost in the sauce. I learned years ago to only count those with you, not those against you, because you're never going to be happy and you're never going to be in a situation where you win the exact absolute of everyone's desire and attention. Everyone's not on board for what you do, no matter what. The first stories of life, if you want to get biblical, it's a relative world. It's not an absolute world. You're never going to convince all. And for her to kind of dive and attack in the moment of need for your son and an emotional toll he's going through, and he's thinking about his future, and we're addressing those who weren't even there for him in the first place. That's a sad situation there. So for me, KD, stop listening to him. I know it's difficult. I'm not in your space. But who gives a damn? No matter what move you make, someone's going to resist it. So stop counting those people who are.
Yeah, I he has nothing to prove to me. I admired him, and I'm probably on an island when it comes to this. I admired his move to the Golden State Warriors because he did what he chose to do. It was where he wanted to play. It was what he sought. And he knew that he was going to get a lot of flack, or he certainly should have. And he weathered that, and he succeeded. This, to me, he loses something. I don't know if it's respect, but I thought he was above it, or I thought he could be. Yeah. And now he's paying the ultimate price, because this was succumbing to the critics. This was, whether they were in the locker room or they were in the public, it was not doing what was best. It was trying to prove something to people out there that didn't need to be proved. And so ultimately, yeah, I lose something here, because I feel like he took a step back. He proved something by coming to Golden State. He proved something else to the negative by playing last night.
Mm. Well, you know, Kevin has been such a great inspiration throughout his career. I've had an opportunity to know this young man when he was sophomore, junior in high school. So I've been able to watch his progression and how he has ascended to this level of excellence of Kevin Durant, one of the great players, or the best player that's playing in the game today. But the one thing is, you got to learn how to block out the noise when you get to that pinnacle where he's at. And I think if there's anything that we can criticize, we've always seen him kind of look over his shoulder, if you will, to critics and people who criticize him. And I think you learn, you know, how to do that over time. The great ones learn how to block out noise. And that's what you're looking for, Kevin. I think we're asking him to do something as he's learning. So, you know, he's made so much. As you mentioned earlier, Rick, you know, going from Oklahoma to Golden State was a big step for him, because winning mattered to him. Anyone that knows him knows that basketball matters to this young man. This man loves the game. And now it's, I think, really critical to his career that he moves to the next step as well.
You know who I gain admiration for is Derrick Rose, is Kawhi Leonard, is LeBron James in his way. Because I've always thought he measures the game. And we're so used to guys who just compete and go to the wall. And I look at LeBron James' longevity. Maybe he was smarter than all of us. And again, you got to face that criticism at times to be able to approach it.
I'll say this, and I want to be careful. I don't want to drag y'all into something I may not explain here fully. But I said this years ago about the difference between Kevin Durant and LeBron James. And I mean this in the most constructive way possible to Kevin Durant, because I believe he's a good person, a smart person, very well-intentioned. But he's got to create some distance between himself and his mom. I'm just sorry. And LeBron James, years ago, and I said this, this is the difference. LeBron James' mother was at a game and got out of line, and LeBron told her, sit your ass down. And people criticized him for it. And I defended him. So he's at work. He's the man of the house now. He's supposed to call those shots. And that's what I wish that Kevin Durant was more comfortable with in terms of, because, and again, this is way too deep for this little small segment, but we have an issue in our community where mama's always in control. And that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Well, that's what's interesting about her speaking out here in this instance, because from what I know, he has, over the last year or so, separated
right. Yeah.
and distanced himself really from mama. And
I don't even want to say distance.
I'm just telling you from what I've heard.
I get, but I want to be clear to any viewers here, because we're not talking about distancing himself from his mother.
Right.
Playing his proper role and her playing her proper role
right.
with this dude in his 30s, NBA, he's the provider of the family. Again, there's a whole big war going on in America about patriarchy and matriarchy. And these games that men play, that's for patriarchs. It's not for matriarchs.
Well, I would say this. As you were saying, BJ, you got to learn to separate the signal from the noise on any level. I don't care if you're the man on the team or you're not even playing on the team. You're just walking around the yard getting teased. What's real from what's fake? And I wish KD had an arrogance about him that didn't necessarily exude to others, but he felt it within. An arrogance that he felt displaced from this world. So therefore, I'm not connected to all your opinions. Let's be real about that. I can be interdependent with the world. That means I'm a part of this world, but we are not connected because our days are different. My pressures are different. So I have to stand at this different vantage point. He needs to learn what everyone needs to learn, that there's one thing in common from being selfish and selfless. It's self. Damn, this world would tell you to always care about other people first. And damn it, I tell my kids and I tell anybody who gets around me, it's you first. You got to have the capacity for anything before you can give it to others. And I think KD, it seems like at times, has that reversed. That noise can't get in here if you protect your filters. Mm. But right now, it doesn't seem that way.
It's also a matter of building those filters. Who do you have around you?
Yeah.
Who's going to support your best self? Who's going to support you in making those tough decisions? You know, I think of your the what you went through with Derek.
Right.
Like, you guys were separated and isolated, and you took as much heat as Derek did for the fact that he didn't play.
Exactly.
And I understood where he was. And I admired and respected that, because there was a lot of heat. And it wasn't just you're not playing. It was challenging the character of the person
right.
for what you're doing. And the easiest thing to do is to manipulate yourself to address, oh, I'll be who you want me to be. Oh, I need to play to prove to you
mm-hmm.
who I am.
Mm-hmm.
The harder thing is to say, no, I know who I am, and I don't need your approval. I'll show it in my way.
I'm going to say the last thing, and I hate to keep going back, but someone needs to be in Kevin Durant's ear telling him what my father told me in different ways, and it's a cliche. Lions don't care about the opinions of sheep. And I'm just telling you, if mm-hmm. Kevin wants to be a lion, because that the NBA is a jungle and you need to be a lion out there to be the best player in the world, don't care about the opinions of sheep. Don't get caught up in beauty shop conversations where everybody sits around and gossip about each other. Man. Girl, did you hear what he said? Blah, blah. That's what all this Twitter stuff is to me. It's beauty shop conversation. You got to be a lion enough to know them are sheep talking. I'm not about that. Coming up, people were outraged when Raptors fans cheered KD's injury last night. But is the reaction being blown way out of proportion? We get into that next. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher are back. Let's return to the NBA Finals, where Kevin Durant's injury has prompted some huge reactions across the NBA. But that has everyone talking is that the Raptors fans, who actually cheered when Durant went down, after the game, KD's teammates were fired up.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's classless. And, you know, for me, I've never had an experience. I've always witnessed Canadians be the nicest people that I've ever encountered. And that was classless.
All right, we don't have a lot of time here, but I don't have a problem with what the fans did. It was initial gut reaction. Hey, we're going to win.
Yeah.
And then once they found out it seriously hurt, they started cheering. I don't have a problem.
I don't have a problem either. I thought initially it was the calf re-injured. I didn't think it was like, oh, my, his next year is compromised.
Right.
His prime is compromised. I'm with the fans. Every sack, every tackle I've ever had, there was a part of me like, I hope I hurt this dude. Then when I realized I did, I was like, I hope it's not severe.
Yes.
Mm. You know, and then it's like, okay, it is severe. Clear the deck. I'm back in support of this guy. Get better. But, yeah, these fans just got caught up in that.
Yeah, and let's look at context of the game. He had gotten into it with Fred VanVleet. So there was already a little bit of, yeah, okay. And when he first went down, was it, as you said, do we think it's severe? Or do we think that, hey, this guy that came back and is trying to take our championship from us looks like he fell down. Yay. And then once they realized it was worse than that, they flipped around. I don't have an issue with anything that they did. It was a natural reaction.
Well, even more so that there was no one. He didn't fall down because of a collision.
Right.
So I think the fans were like,
he just stumbled.
He stumbled or he.
No.
I don't think they really at the initial just like.
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. I don't want to listen. I'm not going to beat him up. But they thought, oh, we just won the NBA Finals.
Kevin Durant. I'm not giving him that much credit.
Oh, yeah. That's what they were. Because at that point in the game, it was crystal clear. Oh, KD, this is going to be a blowout.
But here's the question. We're all hyper aware of the injury and what he was dealing with and what could potentially happen. I don't know that everybody in that arena was like.
In that arena? This was in the second quarter. It was clear as day.
No, that he was playing well, but that he was dealing with an injury.
No one knew the severity. No one knew the severity.
It meant that it was over.
And no one knew the Achilles. The dumbest experiences I get is going to actual games, because when I walk away, I'm like, damn, I don't know the stat sheet. I don't know what happened, right? We all know this.
You don't have instant replay.
No instant replay. No slow-mo. You don't know the stat. You don't know. I didn't know it was Achilles to post-game when Maya said. So they didn't know.
But they didn't know what the injury was.
They just thought it was the calf.
But they were like, yes, he's injured.
Right.
We're winning the NBA Finals.
I agree with that. Is there anything wrong with that?
I don't have a problem with it.
Right.
But I don't think they cared. And in the initial moments, I don't think they cared about the severity.
But they cleaned it up. Big boy status. Yeah. They started to chant KD on the way to the tunnel. Yeah.
All right. Coming up.
They cleaned it up.
We'll give you our latest approval ratings for Steve Kerr. And Uncle Jimmy will tell us what he thinks of the Warriors coach. Next! All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. The most fun you can have talking sports. Uncle Jimmy's here.
Most deaf.
J-I-M-M. Uncle Jimmy, any early thoughts on the show?
Yeah. You need me. Hey, listen, let's hurry up and get to the dummy of the day, because this was the easiest one for me to do whatsoever. Big dummy of the day goes to somebody that said that you can't accomplish nothing in going to the gym. It don't never.
Where?
I guess you said can't nothing be accomplished by going to a gym, getting
beat
up.
Where did I say that?
Where did he say that? Uh-oh. Check the record. Check the tape.
It's evident you ain't spent enough time in the gym to know that.
That ain't right.
I rest my case. Merriman
so you said his actions speak louder than his words, and he ain't even have to say it. That's messed up.
All right. Anyway.
That's cold.
What he said. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Steve Kerr, the Golden State Warriors.
I made that up.
This is why all of that woke bullcrap spewed in the NBA in general and spewed by Steve Kerr in particular strikes me as totally disingenuous.
Steve Kerr, as a coach, has to realize that this is my time to get command of my team because, guys, we survived. Won the game.
All right, we had a pretty passionate discussion about who to blame for KD's injury. We pretty much blame the Warriors organization. Let KD off the hook. What's your take, Uncle Jimmy?
You let KD off the hook. Why?
Because the Warriors organization.
Look, man, KD
protected it.
He did. KD is Iron Man.
He's dead.
Iron Man, what?
What'd you say?
He dead.
What happened to him?
He died. I forgot.
At the end of it, Iron Man got the glove back from Thanos.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
Snapped his fingers, and all of the Avengers came back to life. But Iron Man had to go.
Ooh, that deep on. Keep going.
Huh? And everything in Golden State went right back like it was before. That's called the ultimate sacrifice.
Man, that's real.
Now,
spoiler
to be
alert.
Honest with you.
Would you have done that? Oh, hell no. Ain't no way in hell. Uncle Jimmy was born at night. I wasn't born last night. Hey, look, man, hold up. Let me be honest with y'all, because it's easy to joke about this, but honest to goodness, man, this is something that I've watched, man. I watched this affect a lot of our young brothers for a while now. We get caught up in this Twitter, social media, Facebook, MySpace, and we allow people that we don't even know,
man,
to have an effect on our everyday life. KD got forced into that last night. You know, he Twitter's just like your friends to sit up there and say, hey, man, if I was you, ain't no way in hell I'd be sitting at home.
You know what I would have done if I were?
Shut up. You know, I mean, for real. Hey, man, look, I'm going to tell you right now, you can't piss down my neck and make me think it's raining. I ain't having it. I know the difference.
Yuck.
That's a bad analogy.
That is
hey,
bad.
Bro, I'm too old of a cat to get clawed by a kitten.
What?
I'm just letting you know I see what's happening, man. Too many times we sit up here and let people we don't know or have an effect on our everyday life. KD, I wish you wouldn't have done that, man.
Yeah, man.
Let me tell you something about life, man. Respect is earned. That's how you get it. You don't take it. It's just earned.
Let me tell you how my grandma told me. She said, if they didn't make you, they can't break you. So guess what? KD, you built this game off of your work, off of you being in the gym. Why the hell you gonna let us now invade you because we got your Twitter handle?
I'm gonna tell you my take on this, and Jim and I had this discussion this weekend or yesterday after the game, is we're so caught up in this deal, put respect on my name.
Man.
And the only person that can put respect on your name is you.
Yourself.
And so quit waiting for someone else to give you some respect or whatever. Respect yourself. And that's where I think, and again, not in the most negative way that we see played out in the streets a lot of times. Don't respect me, don't disrespect me.
Yeah.
But in a small way, I think Kevin Durant got caught up in, you gonna respect me, put some respect on my name. And he made a mistake.
Yeah, he walking around needing approval rating every day. Like, everybody, what do you think of me in terms of this or that? And I hate to be that guy, but that gets you nowhere. That makes you chase your tail. You really got to keep it inside between the ears and live in this world. And you're no better than anyone else. But don't let them navigate your course, man.
KD, you want spec on your name, bro? Put it on there yourself, man. Damn everybody else.
Forget them. Real talk.
And to be honest with you, that's exactly what he was doing with his play before.
If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense,
thank
bro.
You. Oh, here you go, DJ.
I'm just
Quick
trying to
now.
Say.
You got another rap song coming out your
All mouth? Right, let me get to Steve Kerr, who I'm very low on. Steve Kerr.
West Coast.
I'm taking all the respect off his name.
Oh, you sure are.
Zero job performance. He just ruined one of the greatest players of all time.
Did they win the game? Are they still alive in the series?
Can 12 they win another minutes. Championship? 12 in the first again. 14 minutes. 22 all-time greatness, 8 character, 5 Which, authenticity.
8 character?
35 dumpster fire.
Maybe they need Rob Lincoln.
Got all kinds of stuff to say about immigration and everything else, but KD gets injured, Cat got your tongue.
No, the marching orders got his tongue. Bob Myers was like, it's on me, bruh. So go out there and coach these boys. He got a higher grade for me, 75. Not GOAT moment for him. Obviously, he's one of the greatest coaches, certainly by win percentage. But I have him higher than you just because I think he was following lockstep.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.